Thank you for joining us again for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Good evening, Satellite Nation. I'm Brian Titanium. And we have a show lined up for you tonight. We're going to be starting off the show. We're going to be talking about rumors. Yeah, good old gossip. Yeah, the kind that are really just facts that only really a few people know about. Joining us in a few minutes will be Scott Krakowski. He's with Satellite Guys US, the operator of the site. And I understand that he has some rumors that Satellite Nation is buzzing about. And then we'll be talking about the recent release of the hottest FTA receiver to hit the market, the Android-based Amico A3. Now, this is a media center, and it's much more than a satellite receiver. It has IPTV. Android apps are the big thing, and that's over 1 million Android apps available for that for Android devices and counting, and also streaming. So a big deal going on here. I really want to thank all the Satellite Nation for your suggestions for the Tech Corner segment, and that will be featured in the second half of the show. We're going to be opening up the phone lines in about 30 minutes, follow up on a few of the items, some things like calculating the current draw in multi-LMBF and motorized systems, and then how the Satellite Nation members are doing in building their own outer net receivers. And then the micro mini bud dishes. You know, buds. Those are the big ugly dishes. But I kind of think they're a little pretty. So just wanted to see if Michael is there with us right now.
I am here.
Hey, Michael, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. Hey, do you have some phone numbers for members to call in later on in the show?
Yes, sir. If you want to call in and talk to us, you can call in at 1-877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. Or if you're, say you're international or you want to save us a little money, call us at 347-327-9319. That'll get you right into
this. Okay, Michael. So to save Satellite Guys from a massive phone bill, what is that phone number one more time?
347-327-9319.
Perfect. Now, if you do miss a Satellite Nation show, you can find a link after each show on Satellite Guys Radio Forum, and that can be found at www.satelliteguys.us. Now, if you're not already a member of Satellite Guys, we invite you to stop by, check out the many forums on subjects like Dish Network, DirecTV, free-to-air, IPTV, over-the-air television, phones, radio, television programming, discussion, and much, much more. So we invite you to visit www.satelliteguys.us.
Well, let's get this show started. And if I can, everybody else, excuse me now, I've been having sore throat issues the last few days, but I want to hear some rumors.
Well, let's see. What about some rumors? In a moment, we're going to have Scott on here, and I'll just unmute him here so he can join in with us anytime. Good evening, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. How about yourself?
Oh, doing great. Thank you very much. Michael's a little under the weather with a little throat thing, so we're just going to have to crack open his mic a little bit more tonight.
It's going around. It is definitely going around.
Well, I'm going to...
I want to talk some rumors tonight, huh?
Yeah, I want to talk some rumors, and I got some juicy ones. But the first one that I just wanted to talk about was, you know, everybody's looking forward to that AMC-1 to SES-3 transition. And last week, Uplinker's website had stated that the transition was supposed to happen, and all the hobbyists got really excited that we would finally get rid of this oddball SKU KU-band satellite. Well, rumor has it Who's? Sounds like somebody's really excited and breathing into their mic. Well, rumor has it that the FCC still will not grant SES-3 permission to operate anything on that satellite but telemetry for control. Now, on the surface, you would think that, you know, what's going on here? Now, we've heard, of course, that DirecTV, you know, is involved in this. And so it seems that DirecTV is duking it out with SES in the FCC corridors over the SES-3 payload. Do you know what that payload is?
It would be the KA band?
Exactly. So now there's a massive struggle being played out as these two corporations try to outmaneuver each other to control a satellite position and offer KA band in this area. Now, SES wants permission to only operate C and KU band, but DirecTV says, hey, not so fast. Is that a KA band in your pocket? Or are you just happy to be part of it? So some think that SES is trying to sneak into the KA band delivery from the 103 West position, and others say that this is just a power play by DirecTV to control KA band satellite distribution. Now, of course, AMC-1 still has a few years of fuel and reserves left, so hopefully this transition doesn't take a couple years and that it will happen sooner than later. So that's my rumor. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know why DirecTV is really playing this game. They're supposed to be trying to show that they're this nice, honest, fair company in order to get this merger done with AT&T. Which leads me to another rumor about DirecTV. And the rumor going around is that DirecTV may be considering a consolidation as part of their merger agreement with AT&T to give or sell Dish Network their 119 orbital location.
Wow.
That does not mean the satellite. That means the transponder space.
Right.
That's going to be a big one.
Wow.
Right now, DirecTV.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, I just find it very interesting that they would give up that slot. Now, we've seen them use that spot with a bunch of oddball switches through the years, and you know, a lot of us didn't really understand why that agreement was in place for that satellite to start with.
Well, the big thing that that's on that satellite right now is standard definition locals. And if you're with DirecTV now and you're a new customer, you will no longer get a satellite dish that's aimed at 119. The new LMBs do not even feature 119 on them. So it looks like they're going to be phasing out 119 for standard definition in favor of high-definition locals. And also that the Spanish phones that are on 119 currently will soon be moving to other satellites so that way they can clear off some space on there.
Now, those channels are also duplicated on another bird using MPEG-4?
That's correct.
Okay. So it wouldn't be a loss of any channels. It would just be maybe transitioning some customers over to new gear.
That would be correct. And the new switches, the new dishes, the new LMBs all are missing 119 on them. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense for DirecTV to keep running a 119 satellite when they have no intention of expanding the programming on it or continuing the programming on it, since most people are moving away from standard definition to high definition.
Very interesting rumor.
You know, they want to up. Yeah, that's a big one, and I'm hearing that it's all like almost a done deal. So, but again, I don't know if they're going to be selling the slots to Dish or giving them the slots as part of a concession.
Now, how many slots is
to
that?
The FCC? I believe it's 11 transponders.
Wow, that's a lot of spectrum that Dish could be loading up some more stuff on that bird.
Yep, and the satellite that's there for Dish can actually broadcast on all 24 transponders, so they could use that immediately. They don't need to put up a new bird to access it.
Yeah, right off the bat.
So it's a very interesting rumor, and again, I'll emphasize it's a rumor, but I've been hearing it from more than one party, and I know how badly DirecTV wants this deal to go through with AT&T, so it would not surprise me in the least.
Well, what else do you have for us, Sir Scott?
Well, some news coming out, and I don't know if it's news or not, but another big rumor here, and we've been hearing about Dish Network planning on offering a cord cutter IPTV service, and we are now hearing the name of that service is going to be New TV.
And how is that spelled?
It's spelled N-U-T-V. The first time I read it, I thought it said Nut V. What the hell's a Nut V?
I think it has all to do with what you capitalize and what you don't.
Everything's lowercase.
Hmm.
According to their trademark that they just put through with the logo, it is all lowercase.
Well, that's pretty Nut V.
It looks like Nut. Yeah, looked like Nut V to me. But you know, it's going to be an interesting service for around $20 to $30 a month that you're going to have some of these big time channels, including the Disney and A&E suites, available to you without cable, without satellite.
So now, what platforms
people can subscribe to?
Is there any talk about what platforms?
As far as I'm hearing, they're looking to get on everything.
Roku, Android.
Yeah. Yep. Everything, Roku, Apple TV, whatever they can get on, even built-in set-top on smart TVs. So if you got a smart TV, you just turn on your TV, download the app, and then you can call and subscribe, and you got all your favorite channels without having satellite or cable television.
Wow! Now those are only going to be the national feeds, correct? Or national channels?
That's only going to be the national feeds. Yes, I've heard some rumors that some locals are interested in being carried on the service. But I've also heard that they're also afraid of going on such a service because they're afraid of what the networks may do. You know, if you're a local station owner, you want your carriage to be for your station as many viewers as you can get. But
oh, yeah.
if you're a network, you want to be controlling of everything and know where your stuff is going. And we've seen this, with NBC, with Fox, and especially with ABC. Controlling who watches what. ABC is a big one where if you missed a show and want to watch a show on ABC, you have to have a username and password from a cable or satellite provider.
Hey, Scott.
Which is kind of silly.
Where do I get one of those? I'm an over-the-air viewer.
Yeah, that's if you're an over-the-air viewer, you're SOL.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, for some reason, they don't let people who are over-the-air viewers access the service, which we talked about this before, Brian, but I think the word was double-dipping was the word that came to mind.
Yeah, double-dipping definitely comes to mind, you know, and then there's some ardent supporters out there who go, oh, no, broadcasters, they're not double-dipping. Oh, come on, then give me... I'm an over-the-air viewer. Give me access to ABC.
Right. And if you're an over-the-air antenna viewer, you cannot watch ABC reruns at ABC.com because you do not have a username and password from your cable company or satellite provider.
And they're available on Hulu before they're available through their website.
Oh, yeah. Follow the money trail.
Mm-hmm.
That's always what is said. Let's see there. So that's another one there. So I don't expect locals to be on new TV upon launch. But maybe sometime in the future when they figure out that, hey, maybe this is not a bad thing, then maybe they'll go for it. So yeah. One of those interesting things, I'm interested to see when they launch. I'm expecting a launch maybe October, November timeframe. So it's coming up on us really, really quick. And Dish will be the first company offering such type of service, offering these type of channels. So
now I would expect that's a launch, that we'll be seeing some advertising coming up pretty soon.
Yep. One interesting thing when researching the new TV, newtv.com, somebody owns it. It's a private registration. However, the domain name is for sale. And that struck me kind of odd.
Yeah, kind of like the Fire that was linked up to some adult site, I think, originally for
yep.
for Amazon.
Yep. Yeah, they had Fire TV, and then you had the adult service Fire TV, which is spelled F-Y-R-E. Yeah, that's the way it was spelled. And adult service, and it was like free advertising for the adult service. They loved it.
Man, Harold sure likes his new IPTV box.
And other rumor news. This just appeared today on Satellite Guy's Uplink Report for Dish Network. Something we've actually been talking about in the pub for, I believe, over a month, month and a half. Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been talking about Dish adding Fox Sports 2 in high definition. Well, today it was uplinked, and I'm getting word that it could be available within the next 2 weeks. And that comes actually as a surprise to me, especially after last week's very public fight between Fox Sports 1 and Dish Network. Fox Sports 1 was not allowing Dish to air the college football games it was carrying, and Dish was saying that Fox Sports 1 was demanding more money for Dish to be able to show those college football games. They figured out what was wrong there. They settled it, and the game was shown. So Fox Sports 2 now is in the wings, getting ready to launch on Dish Network. And again, that's one we've been talking about for quite a while, and I was kind of surprised when I first heard it in the rumor gallery.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, did any idea of what that agreement entailed, or was it just over some pushing in some more programming to the package?
No word what it entailed. I'm ultimately guessing that Dish caved in and paid them the extra money they wanted for the games. Just tonight, before the show started, I actually posted to Satellite Guys another fight between Dish and another programmer, this one being the Big Ten Network, where viewers in New Jersey will not be able to watch this weekend's Rutgers game because Dish is refusing to pay extra to carry the game from the Big Ten Network. And it's the same fight they had last week with Fox Sports 1. And from my standpoint, come on, guys, enough is enough. People purchase, you know, premium television to get these premium games, and you know, it's getting kind of childish. Every other provider carries these games, and you never hear a mention of any fights, but yet every week, Dish, who claims to have the most college football, is getting in fights over college football and not showing the games. It needs to stop.
Yeah, it does.
So do you think that these are just tactics by the providers to milk a little more money, or do you think this is Dish Network stepping up and crying for the bottle?
I think it's both. I honestly think, you know, it takes two to tango, and Dish is not the innocent party here because it happens to them every week.
Yeah.
And the providers, I'm sure, are not innocent themselves, but they're, you know, they're going to meet somewhere in the middle of the road for everybody. And, you know, if you're subscribing to satellite so you can see these things, they should be shown. I don't know how contracts are written for programming, but if I'm a cable company or satellite company, and I purchase the Titanium channel, which shows all of the football games that I want to see, yet there's a really good football game on Titanium channel that people are really interested in because both teams are undefeated, and you know, and they got some good quarterbacks, whatever. That Titanium channel now wants me to pay extra to show that to my customers, even though I'm already paying for that channel. It doesn't seem right to me.
Well, I see your point, but I don't like you using the word titanium with such a negative.
I was going to say the microelectronics channel, but it didn't make sense.
Oh, I think Michael would be up in arms, too. But, hey, I mean, both channels sound riveting, and I could subscribe to both of them myself. Well, very good. Now, I understand, kind of segueing now into just in the last couple of weeks, we had a launch of a brand new satellite receiver here in North America and to the world. And it is really, as it should be pointed out to most listeners, this is not just your daddy's set-top box.
No.
This is
no, and honestly, Brian, if I can say this, This box here is so good that it may replace my Roku box.
Why is that? I mean, that's cool to hear, but on what benchmarks do you say that?
Everything you ever wanted to have on your TV is now available to you.
And going back to your new TV that you just mentioned from Dish Network, I see where that app would fit in very nicely on this box.
New TV would be great on it, but to be honest with you, most of these networks that New TV will have are already available via their own apps on this box. For example, Disney. If you want to watch Disney Channel, you got the Disney app. As long as you have an account with a username and password from a pay provider, you can watch the stuff in glorious high definition on this A3.
Now let's give a high level review of this box. What it is, it's a set top box that's designed to be a home media center and a DVB-S2 satellite receiver. So a lot of people out there were looking at this box going, oh man, that's a pretty expensive satellite receiver. What can it do? But when you look at this box, and I must say, just picking it up, it's made out of a chunk of aluminum. It is nice, well crafted. And that remote, tell me about the remote, guys. What do you think?
You know, I didn't think I was going to like the remote after hearing, you know, I thought it was going to be like a Wii type clone thing. But it works really, really well, and I'm really shocked at when you put your finger on the mouse pointer button, you don't even have to push it down. It just senses your finger there, and you just start moving your hand around. The cursor starts moving around the screen. I don't know how it senses your finger there without pushing anything, but it is really cool.
Gary Busey! Gary Busey! Gary Busey!
Yes, you can talk to it.
And that blew me away. What did you guys think of that? When I got it, I hate to say it. The first thing I said was, Gary Busey.
And it worked, didn't it?
You know,
it did.
I forgot about that feature until a couple of days later, and then I realized it, and I started screaming a bunch of things into Google, and it just started popping up on my screen. And I was like, this is great. No more typing. Yeah.
And I'm using it to navigate channels. Now, as I had pointed out a month or so ago, it didn't work too good when I was trying to pronounce one of these Middle Eastern channels on Galaxy 19. But more mainstream channels, you know, I surf using that for a lot of my channels. It's so cool.
Yeah. It's probably the best remote I've ever used. And that's coming from me. That's a strong statement because I've used and tested a lot of remotes. If people remember when the 921 was announced, they were supposed to come out with this touchpad remote.
Yep.
It was a flat remote and it didn't have any real, it had six buttons on it, if I remember correctly, it had a touchpad and it had a trigger on the back. So you use your thumb, move the cursor around on the trackpad. And then, you know, when you're ready to hit the enter button, you hit the trigger on the back.
Yeah.
I complained about it the entire time I had it and was testing it. And then one day I got an email from somebody big in the company and said, Scott, I need your help. I'm going to send you an email with a question, and I want you to answer it as honestly as possible, as detailed as you can get. I said, sure. Email came across and says, tell me what you think about the touchpad remote.
Why, thank you for
asking. Good and bad.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
So I answered it out. It took me about 15 minutes to tell me everything I liked about it and didn't like about it. And I sent it back over to the person. And within 5 minutes, my phone rang. And it was the person who sent me the thing. And he goes, thank you very much. You just helped me make my decision. No more touchpad remote.
Yep.
And the touchpad remote was shelved.
Well, thanks for killing that, Scott. So everybody who's listening who loved that feature that never got to use it, Scott's home number is.
Yeah. You know, I met the designer of that remote, and we talked about it. And he was basically only working on what he was given to work on. And he knew it had shortcomings, and it was, you know, not really usable in a if you're laying in bed and you want to switch over to USA Network, it was a pain in the ass because you had to type in USA on a touchpad and all those other things. And he understood. He took it well. So it wasn't meant to offend him, but it was just how would an average person use this remote in their home? And it was really, really unusable.
The one thing, though, the one thing I can tell you about the A3 is I had the remote control sitting beside my bed, and there is no channel called Oh Baby, Oh Baby, Oh Baby.
Joe hasn't added that channel yet.
I'm surprised.
Sorry. I apologize to everyone for that.
Yeah, but getting back to the remotes, you know, as I say, this is the best remote I've ever used, and I'm not saying that. Amoco is not a sponsor of Satellite Guys or Satellite Guys Radio or anything else like that. I'm just being honest when I tell you, if you don't want to use the mouse, you don't need to use the mouse. If you don't want to use the speech, you don't use the speech. It's a full-featured remote right there for you. But if you want to use these extra things, there it is, and it makes life so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
If you're on a set-top box or you're familiar with the Android operating system and you want to log into Netflix, now you just click on the login screen and you say your email address and it types it in for you.
Yep.
No more hut and peck.
Now we have about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes before we go to break. But I just did want to say, I think overall it was a pretty successful launch. Now there is an issue with a few people who have done a firmware upgrade. And we know that those units are being RMA'd back to the warranty support center so they can figure out what has caused this problem. The remote control disconnects and it's no longer recognized by the receiver after doing a firmware upgrade. But, I think overall it's been a very successful release. I've been pleasantly surprised.
Oh, I agree. I've seen lots of set-top boxes come out, and this has been, and I hate to say this to you, Brian, because your Micro HD that you put out was a great box, but this one out of the gate is so much better.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know, it's, Scott, you helped me get through a couple of those bumps on the Micro HD when it first hit, and I know, it is very difficult to come out with a quality box, and I think Amoco definitely hit a home run out of the box.
And another thing is I've seen a lot of Android platforms, and they've all been garbage. This has been done correctly,
That's because Spark...
I'm very shocked about that, actually.
Yeah, because all the others use a program called TV Front End, and it really should be TV's Back End, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Just quickly, we have about 1 minute before break, but what is your favorite app so far? What have you guys put on your box?
I'm loving Satellite Guys Radio. And the reason why I'm loving Satellite Guys Radio is number one, I own Satellite Guys Radio. But at night, I enjoy listening to the music. And the remote has an earphone jack built into it.
Yep.
And I plug in a pair of underpillow speakers and plug it into the remote. And then all night, I'm listening to Satellite Guys Radio.
Very,
my pillow.
Very cool. How about you, Michael? Do you have a favorite app yet?
YouTube. We watch a lot of YouTube in this house. You'd have to ask my wife, too. She's took over the box mainly.
This is a box that anybody in the family can use, your wife, your kids.
Yeah.
It's the first free-to-air box where I think I can actually say that. you can set somebody down and say, here's the remote, and they can figure it out and be watching TV in just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, very good. Let's just see where we are on the time here. And I just realized that I did not program in the break. Way to go, Brian.
Yeah. I know. I was watching the time here. I was like, something didn't tick
out. The big rumor is about next week.
And that is?
If I may. The announcement of the iPhone 6.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be the talk of the town. It's really funny. You know, Apple only puts out one phone a year, and all the other companies put out 5 or 6 different models of the same phone a year. And Apple remains the leader as far as press goes, people trying to guess what their new phone will contain. I'm I'm really interested in the new larger, I believe it's 5.5-inch, which is the same size as a Galaxy S5 phone, because as you get older, your eyesight gets worse. And
no, tell me it's not true.
Same so size,
yeah. I'm looking forward to the bigger screen. And another thing I'm actually looking forward to is it's going to have NFC in it, and they're going to be introducing something called Apple Pay. With Apple Pay, you go to your iTunes account, and you tie in a credit card. And when you go down to McDonald's, Wendy's, wherever you shop, even, you know, anywhere where they have these payment systems, you know, when the total comes up on the screen, you wave your phone in front of it. On the front of your iPhone, it's going to say, you know, McDonald's is trying to charge you $8. Do you accept this charge? If you accept this charge, you put your finger on the fingerprint reader on the phone. You put your fingerprint reader on the phone, and boom, you're charged for it. No need to carry around a bunch of wallet full of credit cards. It's just going to be a nice platform where you got one device that can do a lot of things for you. And I'm excited about, you know, the screen size and for the payment feature of it. It's something a long time coming. And next week, it's going to be the big buzzword of the week, iPhone 6.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. All right. People are camped out for weeks up there in New York.
Yeah, I saw on Gizmodo today. They actually got people waiting in line already. Now, next week is just the announcement of the phone, telling what the phone can do.
Right.
The phone is not expected to be available and shipping, and this is a rumor, till next Friday after that.
Right.
So here it is, Wednesday. You've already got people sitting outside for a phone that ain't coming out for 2.5 more weeks.
Yeah, maybe some of them's been up for 2 or 3 weeks already.
And I learned the hard way or the easy way. It's just better to order online and have them ship it to you the same day it's released. No line, no waiting.
Yep. Now, are they going to come out with the different ones, you think? The 4.5 and the 5.5?
Yeah, they're going to come out with two different sizes. They're going to come out with the size that we have now in the iPhone, and then they're going to come out with the bigger one. And they're also going to come up with a deluxe bigger one that features a stronger screen, so that will be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I've seen the reviews on that screen, that Sapphire. I've seen people do all kinds of things to it, 2 or 3 different reviews. They still can't break it or scratch it, you know, I guess unless you really got, you know, normal stuff, even throwing against the wall, you ain't going to break it. So that's pretty interesting.
Now, my only question about next week's big press event for the iPhone, is Apple finally going to release details of their new iWatch?
And
that's something I'm interested in. I've got a Pebble Watch, and I like it, but it's more of a, so I don't have to keep taking my phone out of my pocket and keep messages people are sending me by just looking at my arm. It's not really a two-way interactive type Dick Tracy phone, which I know a lot of people are waiting for.
I'm just not too sure, though, about that. You know, I just, you know, driving is, are you going to be, you know, now ticketed for looking at your watch to see what time it is? I see a lot of things on the horizon here that's going to have to change.
Today that at the IFA, which is like the CES show out in Las Vegas, Samsung actually introduced a new Galaxy S5 watch, I believe it's called. And they said it's the most beautiful smartwatch you've ever seen. It's so smart that you don't even need a cell phone for it. It's got a built-in SIM card slot. You just put your SIM card in there, and you can actually make telephone calls and answer text messages and everything right from the watch.
Wow.
So I'm curious about what Apple's going to do. Apple's going to have a standalone watch, or is it going to have to have a...
I don't know. But if it's Apple, one thing about Apple is they always seem to wow people and do things and do it better than what other people are doing. And that's what I'm expecting here. And I got to tell you, if it comes out and it doesn't wow me, I'll be actually kind of shocked and disappointed.
So we'll be checking in with you there, Scott, to see how your wow meter hits.
Oh, yeah, I'll be posting probably live updates on Tuesday if I'm not out at the polling stations for the Save the Park project, but I do plan on tuning in live for the the release of that so I see what's going on, because I love that stuff.
And now, for a lot of you who don't know, Scott is very heavily involved with saving a park in his area from forward-thinking folks who are going to be ripping it up and updating it and sounding like getting rid of a lot of the things that the locals really want. So, Scott, I think maybe next time we're going to talk to you, you might be a Mr. Mayor to us.
You know, as quite sad as it seems, I've been asked to be on three different committees and commissions after this. Unfortunately or fortunately, I've got a big mouth and I'm not afraid to use it. And for once, it's come in handy for me and people seem to like it.
Michael, have you ever noticed that about him?
Oh, I'm not going to see him.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
I was just going to segue into a tech talk period of our show where we're going to invite folks to call in if they would like and participate. So, Michael or Scott, do you want to give out the numbers for folks to call in?
Michael can give the numbers because I'm outside and don't have the numbers in front of me.
Oh, yeah. If you'd like to call us at 1-877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728. 4, 8, and 7.
And that's fat guys with an S, not fat guys with an F, okay?
So that is 877-728-4897. And the 7 is not an F, as in fat, as Scott points out. So that's it. And then if you want to save Satellite Guys a nickel or a heck of a lot more, you can use the number 347-327-9319. That's 347-327-9319, and disregard the heavy breather on the phone.
Yeah, I don't know who's doing that. I know what I'm listening
to. Well, hopefully it's not me, because I'm holding my phone away from my head.
Well, some,
or you may be hearing me splash around the water.
Oh, stop.
Is that what you're hearing?
It might be.
I thought that's what that was. I'm in the water again.
Well, we're going to do a little follow-up on some things that have been talked about on Satellite Guys in the last week that kind of ties into some things that we had talked about in the last couple shows. The first one was, we had talked about running multiple satellite LMBFs and multiple motors on a single receiver. Now, a couple conversations this week brought up that some people are having trouble with overloading their receiver and causing the receiver to either shut down to protect itself or display an overcurrent. And so the one thing that I was going to bring up, that switches don't always just cut off the power when it selects a different satellite. A lot of switches keep the path open for commands and power to be passed through at all times. Now, one of the members on Satellite Guys pointed out that he tested his Ekota 2x1 switch. And what did he find, Michael?
It's both same time.
Correct. So what he found was it's supplying power on both ports at the same time. So what that means is when you have to calculate how much power your LMBs are going to be drawing as compared to how much power your satellite receiver is providing, if you exceed the amount that the satellite receiver is providing by a significant amount, that receiver is going to try to protect itself, and a lot of receivers will go into a mode like it will automatically just shut down all power going out. And some, I think, like what was the open box S9, I think, those actually would, you could burn them out. So, So get out your calculator. For example, if your satellite receiver is providing 400 milliamp or 500 milliamp of current, check everything that you have hooked up to the switches. So add up the current draw on your LMBs and and add them up and see what those calculate out to. Now, a lot of times LMBs don't actually show how much current they draw, so you would have to test that with a device in line. Now, a lot of the satellite guys members do have meters that will test the amount of current, and actually some of those little cheapo meters, you know, what I'm calling $30-$40 meters, will also show how much current is drawn. So it's really important. You wouldn't have a clue how many times people have emailed me and said, "Hey, what's wrong with the receiver? It keeps, you know, shutting down whenever I move my motor." And then we start calculating how much current they're drawing. And what was the one this week? I think the current draw on the motor and the two LMBs. What was that?
I was trying to remember.
I think it was like 800 plus milliamps. Well, wow. That exceeds every set-top box. Yeah. Hey, we do have a caller from the area code 815. Caller from 815 area code. Go ahead. You're on Satellite Nation.
Good evening, you guys. How are you doing today?
Good evening. Who do we have there?
Bluegrass.
Hey, Bluegrass. Hey, how you doing, Bluegrass?
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Well,
I wanted to ask
we're talking Tech Talk right now, Bluegrass, so what do you know about switches?
Hi, good question. I wanted to ask you, does Scott know anything about Disney XD HD?
Nothing that I haven't posted online. When the deal was first struck earlier in the year, I heard a rumor that it was in the fall. But I have not heard anything since that time. And I did know at that time they wanted to get it up before the new Star Wars series started.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing new to report there, and that's the last I actually heard of it was when we signed the deal, that they wanted to get it up by fall.
So sometime by the fall, right?
Yep.
And so probably like October, November, you know.
Fall is fall all around the world.
Yep.
All right, Alan, thanks for calling. Anything else?
That's it. I appreciate you guys.
Well, thank you for calling, Alan. You have a great day, and we'll look forward to your call again.
You too. Bye.
Bye now.
Hey, we got a couple questions on our Facebook page at Satellite Nation, facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And a question comes in from Jeremy asking how you set up your east and west limits on an ASC-1.
Well, an ASC-1, you just go into the menu and you select your limits and you drive it to the east limit and set your east and save, and then you drive to the west limit and save. It's pretty well outlined in the owner's manual for it. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to definitely to answer any questions that aren't answered in the owner's manual there.
Second follow-up question to that. He says his ASC-1 won't move the actuator when he's using 12-gauge outdoor lighting wire and 18-gauge speaker wire. He wants to know why.
Good question. Need a heck of a lot more information than that. I really couldn't just say it's for this reason or this reason. The main reason that motors don't move is either A, the motor doesn't work, or B, the sensor isn't returning a pulse. And so, it really can be for one of those two reasons, that either the current isn't or the voltage isn't getting out to the motor, or the pulses aren't telling the controller that the motor is moving.
Now, would the wire gauge, the thickness of the wire, possibly cause some of those issues?
No, 12-gauge wire. That's what most... What is on a CommScope cable, what is the gauge wire on that? 12 or 14, isn't it, Michael?
That's 14.
Okay. So 12 gauges...
14 small, yeah.
Yeah, 14 gauge, or 12 gauges is a larger cable, and so... Especially if it's braid. Yeah, if it's braided, that's plenty. Probably focus on the sensor circuit at that point. A lot of people don't use shielded cables for their sensor circuits, and so a lot of noise from terrestrial noise or motor noise especially gets into these circuits and causes a problem.
Yeah, I wish you could get more information here because I'm looking at the question too, and you don't have. Because I don't know. I mean, is it? No, because if you're listening, Jeremy, I'm listening about every week. Way more
specific. Yeah, maybe.
Give us a call, Jeremy.
Yeah, give us a call, Jeremy. And Jeremy, that number is 347-327-9319. That's 347-327-9319. And we'll see if we can help you out a little bit more. Yeah, Michael, see if you can get bring up your volume a little bit, a little closer to the mic there, maybe.
All right, how's that?
Oh, much better, much better. Okay, so switch current, once again, that kind of comes back into play with the motor question that Jeremy just had. You know, equipment needs the appropriate amount of voltage and current to operate. So it isn't as simple as putting a voltage tester in line and testing how much voltage you get, though that is part of the equation. The other part of the equation is to measure how much amperage or how much current a device is drawing. Now, I know a lot of these little digital ohm meters have a amp meter built into them. Now,
correct. In fact, I just got one free from Harbor Freight Tools. They had an ad in the paper. You cut a coupon, went in there, and got it for free.
And so it has an amp meter on it even?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So an amp meter, you can either, is it the clip-on kind that clips over the cable, or is it the type that you have to touch the wires? Typically, they're the...
You got to touch the wire.
Okay. So essentially, in order to test that current draw, they'll give you some instructions on there, but you basically can take a piece of coax cable and put it in line and just twist the inner braid together and the inner conductor together. So you complete your circuit, excuse me, and then you would just go ahead and use the leads to connect as the meter suggests that you do. And then you test the voltage as you switch between a horizontal polarity and a vertical polarity, and you'll notice that the current draw increases when you go to a vertical transponder. And so that's because you have lower voltage means higher current draw to power the same amount of electronics.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it seems that a lot of people are having some problems when they are running one or two LMBFs along with a motor. And one of the suggestions might be is to put a power inserter in line so you can provide more a set level of voltage and more current to provide.
Yeah.
And
more current.
I saw a couple of those. I went looking on eBay, and it looks like inserters from DirecTV seem like they would be a really good device to have around. They're very inexpensive, and what, maybe $20-$25 bucks, you can have a 13-volt, 18-volt switchable insertion.
Yep.
Now, we were also going to do a follow-up on outernet.is. Now, outernet, for those of you who didn't listen to the show a couple weeks ago, outernet is about a streaming service currently just up on satellite, available to North America on Galaxy 19KU, and it's just constantly streaming 24/7 and currently feeding wiki pages. Now, what did Syed ask Satellite Nation to do there, Michael?
To test it and play with it.
And some of the Satellite Nation guys have been testing it, and they've gotten their Raspberry and their USB satellite tuners, hooked it up to a dish aimed at Galaxy 19, and they're actually downloading wiki pages right now. Now, I understand.
Yeah, I saw a couple people post that they were doing it.
Yeah, I guess a couple guys, you know, they say that it's not that easy. And there were a couple different versions of drivers out there that you have to play with to make sure you have the right one. But, yeah, a couple of the guys reported good success getting it. And we would just really encourage anybody who's interested in kind of helping OuterNet test out the service and give them valuable feedback as a satellite user, definitely check out the threads on satelliteguys.us, and then also visit OuterNet, OUTERNET.IS. And there's an active forum.
And if there's enough...
Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. If there's enough interest in OuterNet, I'm more than welcome. I'm more than willing to make a OuterNet support forum on Satellite Guys, so that way people can talk about OuterNet more. So if you are interested in OuterNet, please let me know. And depending on the feedback, we can add a new forum just to talk about OuterNet.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And that includes housing any files you may need or anything else like that. So
yeah. Yeah, so I had said he wants feedback. He's more willing to listen to anybody, and really good guy, you know. And, so, yeah, get out there and play with if you want to play with. He's thinking about on the future, like you said, of making things a little easier. Right now, if you got a Raspberry Pi and a USB DVS-2 thing, you got to turn and play with it. Right now, it's still in beta stage, you know. But it's running 24/7 right now.
Yeah, I guess the download speed is quite slow right now during the testing phase, but... I understand they're going to ramp up that speed considerably, but right now they just want to have a proof of concept that people are able to use very inexpensive equipment. You know, and we're talking, what, about $50 plus a free satellite dish right now, and you're able to get one-way data wiki pages pushed down to you. So I can really see where getting people that are off the grid that have absolutely no access to internet data, it's going to be a very interesting experiment in democracy, and then an actual service that really could change people's lives as they build up libraries of information that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, imagine if you're a farmer and you're in the middle of your field. Now you can check using internet with their planned receiver out in the middle of your field and see what the rain gauges should be and how much water you should give to your plants that day. That's an amazing thing.
It really is. You know, and what they're doing right now is where you have to have a fixed satellite dish on one of two satellites that they have up right now, one in Europe and then one here in the U.S. But eventually they want to move this over to platforms so you can get the same information pushed over to your telephones and other devices without having to subscribe to data subscriptions.
Right.
Now, one of the popular subjects in the past couple weeks is we keep seeing the same thread over and over and over from different people who obviously don't know how to index or search Satellite Guys. I'm joking, everybody. But what is that subject, Michael? You and I talked about it earlier.
Micro budding.
And it's always,
yes, indeed.
What is the smallest size dish that I can use to get C-band channels? What is the smallest size that they can use?
I've used a 1.2 successfully. I mean, you're not going to pick up everything up there, or not even a quarter of it, but what you do pick up there, you're going to be happy because you're picking up C-band stuff on a small dish. But not recommended if you want it for regular daily viewing.
You know, a lot of people are saying, well, that's, you know, my wife, you know, that's all she'll let me have. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't think of my wife being very happy as I'm out there trying to twist the dish and tweak the LMB and cover the LMBF during rain and see broken up pictures. So that one, definitely, like you said, Scott, there are valid reasons as a hobbyist, and maybe your HOA doesn't allow you to have a larger dish. HOH, head of household. Can you tell what I'm watching this summer?
Some have been watching Big Brother.
What show's that? I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, when we're talking about the dish size, something that Michael and I were talking about earlier is there's such a thing as a dish size that you can pick up a few channels during very clear weather. And I think we all can agree, you can do that with a 90-centimeter dish or a 1-meter dish. There's a couple channels that you can get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But once a cloud rolls in or something else, suddenly you're not going to have a reliable reception. Now, the second thing is how wide of the sky, how much of the area of the sky, the beam width of the dish, and the smaller the dish, the wider the beam width. And so one of the reasons that people have problems with these systems is the smaller the dish you will go to, the more satellites the dish gets signals from, and they start interfering with each other. Now, guys, I'm just going to give you a warning, 30 seconds left before the music starts playing. So we're going to have to wrap up here shortly.
All righty, man.
Yeah, micro dish is a fun experiment, but not more than that.
Yep.
It's fun to play with, but if you're going to watch TV, forget about it.
Just forget about it, as they would say. So, but I really want to encourage people, give MicroBudding a try. If you have no other options, MicroBud, MiniBud with a small 1.2 meter dish or so will be a great option. Hey guys, we have 20 seconds left here. I just want to invite everybody back. Same time, same station. We're here on Satellite Guys Radio, Access America on G19, Roku and on iTunes. We'll catch you again next week on the same time. And if you miss us, check us out online for a replay. Take care, everybody.
Thanks to all who tuned in tonight. Join Satellite Guys, Mike and Brian, next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night.